Today's episode is a little different because my guest actually pulled up an old performance review, read it out loud, and we unpacked it together, which is very, very cool. This is a first. And I'm going to give you a little preview. Here's some of the stuff in the review. I've seen this person lean on what he knows how to do best, which is doing the work himself and instructing others on how to do the work. However, I haven't seen him invest the time into coaching and developing others, allowing them to fail, helping them learn from their mistakes, and offering encouragement along the way, even when things aren't going 100% to plan. This has created a negative spiral where the team doesn't feel empowered or motivated to hit any goal they perceive as too difficult, which leads to my guest today needing to pitch in on work in order to get it done, and then having that over time become the expectation. If you've ever led a team, reading that review probably makes your stomach drop a little bit. And there's no shame. This happens all the time. I hear about this all the time in my coaching practice, especially from high performers that are adapting to being people managers and team leads. At some point in time, you were the best doer on your team. You moved fast, you held yourself to high standards, you intuitively knew what to do and what good looked like, which means as a team lead, when something slips, you jump in. You go into fix-it mode. This is the exact playbook that as a doer will get you raises and promotions as an individual contributor. But as a team leader, that's the muscle memory that'll hold you back and have your career get stuck a little bit. Because what happens over time is that your team waits. They wait for you, they stop taking risks, and you just end up doing more work over time. It's exactly what happened to my guest today, Dan Wolchinok. So from the outside, Dan's got a badass resume. So he's building work.coach today, but he started his career at PwC before working at Microsoft. He founded another business that was acquired by HubSpot. He worked at HubSpot for many years before being a senior leader at Reforge, also for many years. But behind the scenes, getting this feedback forced Dan to confront a tough truth, which is that the thing that made him incredibly successful was now holding him back as a team lead. And in this conversation, we talked about it. If you are new here, my name is Andrew. This is Growing Forward, a show that will help you uncover the leadership skills and the inner game used by the top 1% marketing, product, and growth leaders. It's enough from me. Let's go ahead and hear from Dan.
My first job is like a, 15 to 14 or something like that, or 16, was working as a bag boy at the Star Market. This Star Market was super grimy. It was like really weird college students would come here. And I just remember thinking, after I did it for a couple weeks, thinking, I never want to work here again.
And dude, where are you from? Where was the Star Market? Are you from Mass originally?
Yeah, grew up in Park Slope in Brooklyn, and then moved to the burbs around Boston.
All right, dude. And so if we went back to that version of you, it's coding some stuff at night and on the weekends, you're bagging some groceries. What did little Dan think he was going to grow up and become?
I just wanted to be on a team. I just wanted to be part of a team and ultimately bring technology to it. I just loved being ingrained in the team and trying to contribute in every way I could. So it's just a good example of like every place I've been, I feel like I've wanted to be, want to contribute as part of the team. I don't know if I've done that perfectly, but haven't always been the person who's like sought the spotlight, but just wanted to be the person who contributes to the tech and the team.
And so what was your first professional team? So after college, you get a job in the professional workforce. What was that job? And I really want to ask, if we could go back in time, what did it look like if we were to observe you on your first day? What would we have learned about you?
Shortly after the Star Market gig, this is in the dot-com boom in the late 90s, I got a job as a high schooler making websites. And so they were like, we're going to build websites for local businesses. And so they found a whole bunch of high schoolers and they taught them Dreamweaver and Fireworks. And they're like, let's prepare them to crank out websites for local businesses. I was definitely the more technical of, they recruited all these high schoolers that didn't know anything about computers, but I was, of course, this little obnoxious teenager who had been building websites. I still remember there was someone who actually knew what they were doing. There was an adult in the room, and I was just saying, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? And I must have seemed like such an obnoxious, annoying teenager. It was a little bit of a know-it-all. So I definitely was a thorn in the side, and I'm sure of that guy, and I'm sure lots of other people, once I graduated after college, real professional jobs, felt the same way, that I was an annoying thorn in the side of why are we doing it this way? Let's do it this way. Let's do it that way. But I just loved it. I using Figma now, I'm still I wish it was Fireworks for back in the day.
You got a badass looking resume, at least from the outside looking in. I know it's easy to trivialize when it's you, but I'm going to read it off for the listeners. We start at PwC. We go to Microsoft. we found PrepWork, which is eventually acquired by HubSpot, where you worked for a long time, where I think we actually overlapped, although we didn't know each other at that time. You work at Reforge for a long period of time. You just started your own business, Work Coach, we can talk about a little bit more. Very impressive from the outside looking in. If there's somebody listening to this who's only looked at your resume or only looked at your LinkedIn, what would they miss about you or your story or about how you got here?
The thing that's so easy to see when you look at someone's LinkedIn profile and, oh, they've done this, they've done that, it's just like all the failures along the way. And things may look glamorous, but it's real painful. I mean, yes, I sold it to HubSpot, but it's not like I came away with a ton of money. So like, honestly, I look back at PrepWork and yes, I'm proud I sold it to HubSpot, but honestly, I'm a little sad that I didn't raise any funding for it. I didn't recruit a team. Part of the reason I sold it was because the pitch from Dharmesh, one of the co-founders and CTO of HubSpot, was come build your network and then leave with some HubSpotters and go start something else after a couple of years. And so that was a huge goal for me, was to build my network, build my ability to build products, and then hopefully go out and spin up a new company with some HubSpotters. So like, that was kind of a mixed bag. Honestly, if I'm being totally honest in terms of how I look at it. And then also HubSpot, I had a bunch of periods where real up and downs, I was so fortunate. I ended up selling to HubSpot. HubSpot was just this rocket ship in the time that I was there. I have so many fond memories of just all the amazing people, but I bounced around a whole bunch. So I really am grateful to Brian Balfour. He saved my career at HubSpot. I was not going well. And so I just think it's so easy to look at any of these roles and say, oh, wow, the companies and the roles, everything is just perfect. And it's like, it was not. It was a bumpy, bumpy ride. And so it's just so hard to look at someone's profile or just honestly coworkers and think, oh, they have it figured out, or this person's doing well. And I think everyone's struggling. Everyone's just, you know, it's like the duck analogy of everyone looks fine on the outside, but man, everyone's freaking out on the inside.
About a year ago, I had the opportunity to coach this amazing guy named Philip. He was the head of growth for a pretty large subscription business. They were Series A on their way to Series B when he and I worked together. And he was an incredible guy, but relatively new to the head of growth role and relatively new people manager. And so a lot of what he and I worked on together was creating a team of A players, hiring them, putting the right team structure in place to support his growth goals, and what it looked like day to day, week to week to manage that team. And he had a big team. He had 12 US-based team members and another 25 overseas contractors on his team doing all of this different specialized execution work. That ended up being a huge lever for him. Fast forward to today, Philip co-founded a business called Hire Overseas, helping other teams find, hire, train, and manage exceptional overseas talent based on the experience that he had in his previous role, which is pretty cool. So if you're looking to bring on some amazing talent in 2026, check out Hire Overseas. It's built by a member of our tribe, former head of growth. Its co-founder also comes from the startup marketing world, and they can help you find amazing folks to join your growth or marketing team. You can hire growth marketers, paid ad folks, SEO, designers, content creators, dozens of other roles. Check them out for yourself at hireoverseas.com/value. It's hireoverseas.com/value. And so even though everybody goes through these moments, why in the world did you say yes to come on this show and to shine a light on some of these things that for the most part, someone with your pedigree first doesn't have to shine a light on, right? You could very easily tread water like the duck analogy and have nobody know about it. You certainly don't have to do it in a public forum. Why'd you say yes to coming on here and shine a light on some of your tough moments?
People don't talk about it enough. Everyone likes to put a happy face on. And I think that A, it's helpful to talk about it, but also B, it's helpful for other people to hear about it. And I don't think people do it enough. You know, I talked to Katie Berkner, who's now the COO at Harvey, about this initiative she kicked off at HubSpot. I was talking about failure forums, of how to help people share their failures so we could normalize failure being okay. You know, I don't like failure. I don't want to repeat my failures, and I don't want other people to repeat things that I've failed. And so I think it's really helpful to talk about. What does Charlie Munger say? I'd like to know how I'm going to die so I don't end up doing that, or I don't end up going to that place. Like, yeah. How do we just help people avoid these things? Just all with the goal of helping people grow in their careers. I think another thing is I've had a couple people in my career who really helped me, and it's all been about how do you find the right context, the right people. And so you just need to seek those people out. You need to listen to some good podcasts, and hopefully these things will hit you at the right time and the right moment to be relevant so that you can incorporate that into your day-to-day work.
Well, I love that perspective. I mean, that's why we're here. That's exactly why I made the show. It's why you're building what you're building today. So in my career, I'll share a quick personal story. Probably one of the biggest mistakes or like moments that I had, like a this is not going well type of feeling. It's the first time I presented my growth strategy, or at least I thought I was presenting my growth strategy, but really I had just like a shit ton of ideas in a list and I was presenting it to the executives. And I was about 45 seconds into an hour-long meeting and it was clear the meeting was not going to go well. And so I had this horrible pit in my stomach and like the room kind of like spun on me a little bit. It did not feel good. Somehow I survived that. But I'm curious for you, if you've had a time either presenting or strategy or thinking through long-term planning where you had a similar reaction with your leadership team where you're sharing something important and you just felt like this isn't going well and I'm caught off guard here.
Yeah, definitely. Let me give you some context because I think the context is helpful here. So when I joined Reforge, we were about five people. And at our peak, we were just under 200 people, maybe 180, something like that. We'd raised in that time, we'd raised $80 or $90 million. And an entire executive team had been hired above me as the company grew. And the reason I joined Reforge was to be one of the top leaders of the company and try and scale with the company as it grew. So I was a senior leader at Reforge at the time, both in title and influence, but like I definitely been leveled. A manager was hired above me. And so I didn't report to Brian Balfour anymore. I reported to the CTO. This was a tough pill to swallow. Like I just had a massive desire to prove myself that I could scale the company and influence the company at the highest level. But like I was not in the room anymore for the exec team. And so I just had this like burning desire to influence the company at that level.
Right. I feel like anybody who's listening to this has had this feeling. If you worked at big companies before and you were early, this has happened to all of us. It doesn't matter what level or how early you are. At some point, you hope to scale with the company, but at some point they just need someone who's been there before. And usually that's not us. It's very hard to scale as the company scales in this way. So I think a very relatable feeling that you're sort of sharing here, like, hey, I like wanted to show them. Like, hey, they made a mistake. Hey, I want to get in that room. Hey, I should be in that room. When I'm in that room, I'm going to really hold my space. I'm projecting a little bit, but like, I feel that. Like, I feel it in my soul for you.
Yeah. I was at HubSpot. I joined when we had a couple hundred people, maybe 300. It was like May 2023. So I joined. And then when I left, it was probably at least 1,000, maybe a couple thousand. It was like 2028. And so I felt like I had seen a great part of the movie, right? Of like, I am now at a level where I have a large team at HubSpot. I influenced the whole product org. The product org has many hundreds of people. I felt like a leader at HubSpot. And I was like, I can definitely be a leader at a company like Reforge, especially taking it from 5 to 200 people. Like, I should be able to do this. And so I definitely had this goal and I wasn't able to do it. And I think even if you have the skills, even if you have the capabilities, which in hindsight, like I didn't, I learned from things from those people. And it just felt like they could see around corners better than I could, which was like, you know, a little bit of humble pie to eat. But I think even if you have those skills, it can be really hard to let go of the day to day so that you can rise with the company because there's just never enough time. My joint would be like 2 million in revenue. I think at that, and the peak was somewhere over 30. So like, you're just trying to hold on during those like that crazy rise in like employees, revenue, processes, operations, all that stuff. And so it's just really hard to like give up the day-to-day tasks so that you can continue to look out a year, 2 years, 3 years in terms of strategy and what needs to happen. So it was a exciting time. It was a wonderful time, but it was also really challenging for me just personally, just dealing with that, with letting go of things and trying to keep up with the growth of the company.
So Mike Volpe, obviously the CMO at HubSpot for a very, very long time. When he left HubSpot, he opened up office hours for a period of time. I don't know if you remember this at all. It's probably like in 2016 or 2017. He was like, hey, if you're getting this email or like if somehow you're seeing this, if you want to schedule some time with me, let's do it. He set up like an office somewhere downtown in like a high rise. And I met him and I hadn't met him before, even though I worked at HubSpot. And this is what I asked him. I'm like, dude, the thing that I respect most about you is that you were marketing hire number one and you scaled 100-person marketing team. How the fuck did you do that? How does that even happen? I've never heard of that. And he was like, well, you got to give away your job every 6 months, if not quicker. And I was like, how do you even know how to do that? And he had a whole framework for it. And he was very eloquent and sophisticated. And it was clear, like I had zero information and he had a lot of experience with this. I was so impressed by that. And so you're kind of sharing, hey, I'm trying to level up. I'm trying to prove myself. Is there like a moment that you're thinking about? Because my initial question was, if you've had a moment when you're in this room and things just start spinning on you, or they don't go the way that you were hoping to. And again, I don't want to project, but did you have any flavor of that in your journey?
Absolutely. So all that context is helpful. Just like, I had this huge desire and chip on my shoulder to influence the company. And so one of the things I was asked to do was just help us build a model for the company and to get buy-in from the executive team on, like, let's use this as a model for how we think through how the company operates, as well as to use it for measure. How do our metrics flow into this? How do we use this as the vocabulary and the lifeblood of the company? So spent weeks working with the head of finance, interacting with my manager on, like, what is the model we want to use for the company? And how do I present this to the executive team to get buy-in? I just remember thinking, like, oh, like, it was hard to do. We want to use Reforge frameworks.
Yeah, no pressure, right? It's like, I'm at the company who evangelized this idea of growth models. I'm presenting it to the people who have the most amount of experience at the world at this thing. Like, you know, stakes are very high, I would imagine.
Yes, exactly. And so I want to get this right. I want to use as much of the Reforge material as possible. How do I impress these people? How do I win them over? And I just remember thinking, okay, I got to get this right. How do I get buy-in early? How do I show it to some people? Get the perspective. It's not going to be perfect, but, like, okay, how do I start the conversation? And I remember going, and I was one of the items on the agenda. We talk about it, and I'll never just forget how hollow the reaction was. How I had this huge buildup and nothing. Yeah, yeah, first off, it's tough because Reforge was a remote company. So it's all Zoom, talking to a screen all by myself, hard to read the room. I'm sharing my screen, walking through a Notion doc. You just see yourself, or you see one person as you're sharing with your screen on Zoom. So it's hard to get a sense for what people are thinking. The most damning thing was that there were no questions. Literally zero questions. And one of the people in the room asked something else about, like, basically an off-ramp to some other conversation, to some other topic. And I just remember feeling so gutted of just weeks of work on something that I thought was really high value. It was just a total nothing burger, waste of time. It just didn't matter. And just feeling like, I'm aspiring to be in this room. I want to drive the company strategy, and I totally swung and missed.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying this episode of the show. If you are, please don't forget to hit that subscribe button on whatever platform you're listening on. The data shows something like 40% of the people who listen to the show are actually subscribed. It is the best way for you to support the show, and it helps the algorithm find other listeners who are just like you. If you're feeling generous, a quick rating or review makes a huge difference as well. Thank you so much for listening and for your support. Now let's get back to this episode. And so what happened? I'm always curious about this, because when you're in a room and you're not the only one on the agenda and it doesn't go well, you're not in the physical room, so you don't have to sit down in your chair and kind of have to process whatever you're feeling publicly. But, like, what goes through your mind when you sit down and listen to the next thing?
Honestly, I was just angry. I was just kind of furious sitting in the room as we're going through the other topics of, like, no questions? None? What?
Right. I've spent weeks on this thing. You told me it was so important. I thought this was going to be a career defining, a career making thing for me. And,
I'm angry. I'm like, what is happening? What is happening right now? You just, like, all these ideas, all these thoughts are just swirling in your head. And just, like, immediately, it's like going through all the stages of grief of, like, what did I do? Did I say something wrong? Like, what? And just, like, pit in your stomach, thinking, oh man, I don't, do I want to ask?
Yeah, I was going to ask if you asked afterwards. Yeah,
of course. You know, I think there's nothing worse than just sitting in it. I'm definitely not the kind of person who's just going to, like, throw stuff in the closet and just walk away from it. Like, I definitely want to go eat my humble pie.
And so what was the feedback that you asked for that you got based on how it went?
Some of the learnings I took away from it was, like, I was in a role that was a little bit of a support role. I was the head of data at the company. And I was a little bit in it. I didn't own any functions. And so I don't think I didn't have ownership over any of the, like, functions. And so I didn't have a controversial take of what we should be doing. I didn't have obvious next steps other than like, let's do revisions based on your feedback and roll this out to the company. But it wasn't like immediate next steps of like, we have this model for the company and this metric, this thing is the driver and it's failing. And I have ideas for how to improve them. Or here's some, I didn't have anything that like sparked discussion, that stoked debate. And so I've made this mistake a bajillion times now of like, what are the immediate next steps you're going to do as a result of whatever the problem or the conversation is, and knowing what you want those to be before you go in and not just waiting for everyone to react. And so I think I was being a little too nice. I think I was trying to do the right thing instead of saying, what's the thing that's actually going to ruffle some feathers? What's the thing that's actually going to get us to take some action? And part of that was being not owning any one particular function. But, you know, if you want a strong reaction, I think you need a strong take.
I think your takeaway there is so good, too, which is like, have the next step teed up. Don't make somebody ask. Don't make them pull it out of you. That's giving them work, right? I feel like the advice you always get in your career is make it easier for the next level to do their job. And the way that you do that is you pull out a lesson or a takeaway or a next step and you lead with that. And so it sounds like that was a big learning for you, which I think is a great takeaway for the listeners. It's something I'm constantly reinforcing in my coaching. Whenever folks present their model to me or they put together some projection, I always say, so what? What do you want me to take away from this? What's the TLDR? And then how can we lead with that? And it sounds like that's a lot of what you got here.
Oftentimes I feel like I think some of the ideas or the concerns are going to be new or novel. And the people at levels above you, they probably know all these things. They know it's a problem. They may just not be prioritizing it to the degree that you think is right, but like there's very little that's going to blindside the, and so I think that's part of it of like, I wouldn't walk on eggshells about these problems. Like the A, they want to hear them. And there's just going to be politics. That's just the name of the game. You need to be as blunt and brutal. And honestly, sometimes depending on the context, but you need to be provocative. If you want to get a reaction, you want people to act on it. So I don't think it can be, oh, yes, we need to do X, Y, and Z and have those be boring. I think if you want to drive things in a big way at a company, you need to find the right level of urgency and like visceralness to really make something important.
So you obviously know Brian Balfour very, very well from both HubSpot and from Reforge. And I had him on this show and he shared a story about how Brian Halligan, for the listeners who don't know, who is the CEO at HubSpot for a very, very long time, and how basically Brian Balfour made a big call at HubSpot, a controversial call, so to speak. He was wrong. And Brian Halligan pulled him into a conference room at some point in time and was like, look, dude, you were fucking wrong on this thing. You fucked this whole thing up. Now I got to go fix it, dude, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm paraphrasing here. Listeners, go find the Brian Balfour episode. He tells it in much better detail than I just summarized. But the big takeaway for me, I was curious to ask him, is what do you do after that? Like after you have this tough moment where whether you're embarrassed, you get some tough feedback or whatever, how do you get back after it? How do you not take that with you? How does that not become a suitcase that you've picked up that you can't put down again? How do you get that next play up mentality after you go through this situation that you thought was going to be this big W for you? It was kind of a flop. You go back to your desk, so to speak, you have other work. How do you not lose that confidence and that magic that made you who you are just from this one thing?
The thing I always come back to is like, what's the thing that's going to help me the most? Is it going to help me to throw a pity party for myself and to feel bad? Like it's not. The thing that's going to help me the most is confronting it head on and showing that I'm confronting it head on. I still remember my first job out of school at PwC, I wanted a promotion after 2 years. I didn't get it. And a bunch of my peers did. And there's like a bit there at the time, there was a big like promotion party celebration. And like, I just remember going to the celebration party with my peers, celebrating with them. And so many people afterwards came up to me and said, I'm very impressed you showed up to that. It showed a lot of maturity and like showed that like you could have easily just not shown up, but you showed up, you had a good time, you celebrated the other people and you made it about them, not about you. And I think like that is the one of the lessons I took away from that was like, okay, yeah, you screwed up. It's always the next play. Wipe the slate clean and show that you're taking immediate steps that show that you've received whatever the feedback is and you're acting on it immediately. And so, you know, I don't think you go, you say, I want to get on the next exec team agenda and I want to do that next week. Like, that's not the message. The message is like, what's the thing that you can do that shows that you heard the feedback or you were introspective about what went well or what didn't go well? And then what's the right next thing to go build some momentum to get back to that? And so, and honestly, you know, everybody's watching. Everyone's watching the next thing you're going to do. And so they don't care about the failure. They just care about how you react. And so I just keep thinking, like, you know, and the people I've managed, but also myself, it's like, just show that you've heard the feedback and you're going to act on it immediately. And it's all about what happens going forward. Now, it doesn't matter what just happened.
Hey, real quick, if you've been enjoying this episode, I'm going to take a wild guess that you're a marketing, product, or growth team lead, which is also my background. And when I first started leading my very first growth team, I have never been more stressed and worked harder and longer in my career because I didn't really have the right system in place. I said yes to everything and suddenly I was in every single meeting and all the decisions were flowing through me. And I still had my own individual contributor workload on the side. And eventually I stumbled into something that I now call my growth operating system. It's basically a plug and play framework with templates and rituals and how to structure meetings and how to create and document your strategy so that your team can move faster, you can run more experiments, you can win more without you being the bottleneck. So if any of that sounds like you and you're looking for some support, check out my growth operating system at deliveringvalue.co/OS if you want to have more impact and influence without working around the clock. It's deliveringvalue.co/OS. I'd love to hear what you think. I love that perspective. I'm just reflecting on my own journey here because there's been so many times where I've gotten feedback on stuff and then over course corrected or felt like everybody was looking at me and got kind of awkward about it. I feel like one of the areas where that happened to me a lot is when I made the transition from being like a senior doer to being a people manager and getting a little bit more like player coach and leadership responsibilities. I feel like that's a moment that it's like the skills that got you here are not the skills that you need to get to like be successful at that level. So I'm curious for you, if, you know, you've had a long journey with, you know, senior doer roles, people leadership roles, if there's been a time that you can share with us when you are either leading or managing a team and things just weren't going that well, when maybe some of the instincts that got you here were preventing you from taking the next step or maybe even making things worse.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely had a couple of experiences managing teams at both HubSpot and at Reforge. Are you okay? I actually pulled up quotes from my 360. Are you okay if I read some of the quotes that really...
Dude, I love this, man. Yeah, yeah. I love this. Yeah, I love that you did this.
Okay. They're so painful.
I have to ask a couple quick lead-in questions because I've gotten a bad review before. And I kept it and I put it in a drawer for a long time. And it was like, had like a lot of energy for me in that drawer. And then I had another bad review years later and I deleted it instantly. It was like so bad. And I was like, I don't resonate. I don't identify with this review. I don't even want to keep it around. And so is this the first for you? Like you kept it because you were like, hey, I need to bring this so I can look at it. Like, why did you keep it? Maybe is the question I'm asking.
I felt like it was so valuable. I just like looking back on the, honestly, the good and the bad and just like, oh man, that was so painful. I'm glad I'm not in that situation anymore. One reason I wanted to keep it was I was excited to show that I'd grown and show that I'd changed. So I definitely expect to go back to it at different times. And it's definitely enjoyable to go back and think about, okay, and I'd like vanquished those demons. And, you know, I've definitely had some moments where I'm like, I disagree with this feedback. This person is wrong. And I can just, I can have the confidence to say, that's not right. And like, sometimes people are just wrong. Oftentimes they can be right. And so I think it's helpful to be able to be honest with yourself. This one definitely is true. This one's definitely, there was some truth in it.
Was this at Reforge, this at HubSpot? Just contextualize where you're at in your career when you're getting some of this feedback, if you can.
This feedback was at Reforge. So I had already managed a team at HubSpot. This is then at Reforge. We scaled, I probably had like kind of 6 or 7 reports at least, but the company wanted to invest in me. Especially I'd taken a couple of tours of duty, done the company some solids and kind of stepped off the rocket ship path to help us fix issues in the business. And they thought, okay, let's invest in your managerial skills so you can continue to scale your career as the company grows. So here's one of the quotes. I've yet to see Dan make teams greater than the sum of their parts, especially when his own contributions are taken out of the equation. Oh, it's just like, just gut punch just reading it. Okay. Dan prioritizes and seems to enjoy doing more of the hands-on work himself and doesn't prioritize setting up systems, processes, or effective training in order to gain more leverage from his team. He often seems frustrated when others aren't able to perform the same work that he is able to do, either in quantity or quality, but responds by getting frustrated and or doing the work himself, rather than training them effectively on how to take over.
I feel like that's the classic player coach. Hey, I was the star on my team. Why doesn't everybody do it the same? Like, I feel like that's a very common pattern that I've seen 1,000 times.
All right, ready? Ready? This can create a negative spiral where the team doesn't feel empowered or motivated to hit a goal that they perceive as too difficult, leading to them needing to pitch in on work in order to get it done. And then that becoming the expectation or norm. The manager death spiral is for real. I definitely had some feedback and people saying, oh, Dan trains and does things well. It's not like it was like all universally bad, but like there definitely were like pockets of this for sure.
And when you got that feedback, because this is feedback that I work on all the time with coaching clients, where they'll come to me, especially if they're like a new director or they've taken on a bigger team and they're the subject matter expert. I think it's very natural. You have all this, you have years and years of getting pats on the back and promotions by doing the work and pitching in more. And then, you know, you get to this level where it kind of holds you back. When you first got this feedback, I assume you probably read it the night before you had your review or something like that. What went through your mind? Did you read this and go, oh yeah, they saw that? Or did you read this and go, oh, I didn't realize that was a problem?
There was definitely a little bit of denial and like, no, what are they talking about? I definitely fought it at first, but in thinking more and more, I thought, okay, there's definitely some instances where this is the case. And I think there's always, you can always say these were unique circumstances. Like I remember one of the examples that this is referencing, like crystal clear right now, even to this day. And like one of those people didn't report to me. And so it was like a weird dynamic. But like, honestly, I think it showed when I really stopped to like let it all sink in and think about it. I thought, okay, even if it's not the like majority, there is a very strong narrative. And in order to progress, you can't have that narrative be one that takes hold about you or your performance. And I think that's one of the things that I had to come to terms with of like, even if it's a minority of the time, if that narrative spreads, that can be so dangerous and so hurtful. And so I think, again, you got to be like, great, I'm just going to crush this perception. I'm going to obliterate this as a thing that they can reference in future performance reviews. And that was very much like the best thing I could do is show up to the performance review the next day and say, okay, yes, I got to, there a couple of the pieces of anonymous feedback just took me to the woodshed, just like really just tried to tear me a new one. I think I know who that is. Or it could be one of these people. It's not like, it's like one of X people. And so, okay, great. Here's what I'm going to do about it. Here's my plan. And so just showing up at the meeting where I was going to talk about this with a coach or my manager to review it and think through, okay, great, this is how I'm going to act on it. And then asking for feedback on that. I think as you need to put yourself in the manager's shoes. The manager is like, this is great. This person has accepted it. They're going to act on it. And now I can just give them feedback on their plan. That's what the manager wants. And so it's great. How do I make their job as easy as possible in helping me be successful, own up to it, make a plan, communicate it, and ask for feedback?
And how did you go about making a plan? Because I bet there are folks who are listening to this that have been in that situation or are in that situation, because it's kind of review time as we record this. How did you work on it? Did you get a coach? Did you like take a class? Did you read a book? Did you just try a bunch of shit and ask for tons of feedback or something different?
So this 360 was done as a part of an executive coach engagement. So I, you know, they came in, they had a whole methodology. They did the 360 of all my peers. And this was at the beginning of the engagement. And then the next 6 months was like, okay, let's build systems. Let's think through how to make a plan on, you got to double down on your strengths and trying to merit and address some of your weaknesses. If you want. The full coaching engagement was all about how do you help yourself be really successful and demonstrate that you're thriving with this kind of feedback in your role. And so that's another reason I couldn't really ignore this, because there was a person that Reforge had paid a lot of money to engage with me on to help me improve. So it was another incentive to really make it worthwhile. But all, you know, every 2 weeks I was meeting with a coach who was holding me accountable and holding my feet to the fire. And I didn't want to let them down. It's funny how having another person or someone else that you don't want to let down, that having the check-in really helps motivate you to say, oh, right, I committed to doing something last week. I'm actually going to do that. Whether it's improve the onboarding for the new hire I'm going to have. So let me just have that as an example of like, I got this feedback. This is the outcome from it. And I can send it to my manager to say, I just want to let you know that I really took this to heart. And this is the result of it. And I expect that a lot of the issues I had before are going to be gone or, you know, mitigated because I've really put the time and effort into addressing it. And the coach that we've invested in is really helping me do that. So I'm grateful for the opportunity to have the coach, and I'm really making the most of the company's investment there.
I never got trained on this stuff when I was in house. Maybe it's because I worked at early stage companies. I wasn't a people manager at HubSpot. I became one at Wistia. I was one again at PostScript. All of my like manager and operational stuff was just me making mistakes, painful mistakes typically, and then learning from those mistakes. Did you ever have training before this? Or was that kind of your journey here as well, where you kind of operate based on instincts? Maybe your manager asks you a few questions about, oh, how's this person doing? How's that person doing? Or did you have some other tools?
There was a little bit of training at HubSpot.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, HubSpot had some
new managers. Where, you know, and one of the frameworks I really liked that they exposed me to, because honestly, everyone just does what some mixture of the managers that they've had. They're like, I'm just going to do what they did, or I'm going to, you know, pick and choose. I'm going to cherry pick from the best. Some companies have these great managerial new manager programs to help you there. One of the frameworks I liked from the Reforge new manager course was there's like these four buckets. There's like people who don't know what to do, and not knowing causes them anxiety. And so if you don't give them suggestions, they're going to spin their wheels and not do well. That's very different from the person who, if you give them feedback, they're going to be frustrated with you and they're not going to perform very well, because they're like, I know what to do. Stop micromanaging me. And you really need to break down people into the spectrum. There's four different buckets. And that was a really eye-opening thing for me, of like really take, like also evaluating the personality types of everyone on your team and really thinking through like, what is the way I can deliver feedback to a direct report or other people based on their personality type. Some people want to be able to read it on their own. Some people just want you to say it to their face, but some people need time to process things. And so just being exposed to all the psychology at play inside companies was something that I appreciated at HubSpot, but then also just really forcing me to take the time to think through as a part of this 360 was really helpful as well.
Hey, if you're enjoying the stories on this show and feeling like you're ready to tackle some of your own hurdles, I'm here to help. If you didn't know already, I offer one-to-one coaching specifically for people who work on or around growth teams who want to have a bigger influence and impact in their roles. Maybe you're navigating some tough moments, whether it's managing your team or handling feedback. Maybe you just want to step into a bigger leadership role. Or maybe you're at a unicorn company today and you want to make sure that the company doesn't outgrow your skill set. Either way, I can help. If you're interested in learning a little bit more, head to deliveringvalue.co/coaching to learn a little bit more and set up a call with me to see if we jive. All right, enough from me. Back to the episode.
That's cool.
I'm sure that's somewhat influenced by Andy Grove, wrote that book, High Output Management. It's like one of the top five new manager books of all time. He calls that task relevant maturity, or he has a version of that called task relevant maturity. It's a version of what you just shared, which is, it's not even about the person. It's about the context that the person is in. You can have a really experienced person working on something for the first time, and if you don't give them some guidance, here's how long it should take, here's what good looks like, here's what I'm expecting, here's when we should check in on it, they can get stuck and just not get started, or that can be very fresh. And then the flip side is true. We can have somebody who's brand new to the company, little context, working on something where they're an expert in. You got to give them a long leash, be available to be a thought partner if they need it, that type of stuff. Sounds like you had something very, very similar. For folks who are listening to this, going through some version of this transition themselves, whether they've gotten formal feedback or they just feel it intuitively, like they could step up as a manager, as a leader. Are there any other tools or pieces of advice or anything else that you want to make sure they hear?
Before I give my recommendation, there's two other things that I think make things even worse today. One, all the remote work. I just think there are fewer people. I just learned so much from just people around me. There's so many times I just wanted to like grab people and say, can you guys just chat? Don't set a meeting, just chat right now.
Yeah. Right. You're right here. They're right there. Yeah. Just walk right over.
And you just don't have that. It's just, it's funny how it's just hard to send a Slack message sometimes. That's one. Two, with the like delayering of all the tech companies, you just don't have as many managers. You don't have as many people who can like pull you aside and say, hey, send us some unsolicited advice. And so I feel bad for people early in their career who may not be in an office 5 days a week, and there aren't as many people who can help them navigate the oftentimes intricacies of their own company, and just also just things that are just really helpful that need to be passed down. So that's one of the reasons I'm really excited to be building WorkCoach, my new company. The goal is to help democratize some of the things that you do in your coaching business, but make it much more accessible to people earlier in their career. So the whole goal is, how do we help people think through, how do I advocate for myself? How do I empower my manager to be the best advocate for me? Help me prepare for my one-on-ones with my manager. Help me think through these difficult situations.
I love that. Everybody needs help doing that.
I mean, your manager is not there to get you promoted. Your manager is there to be your advocate, but you need to give them the fuel, which is not just good work, but it's constantly reminding them of the things that you're doing, the problems you're solving, the things that don't even bubble up to their level, so that they can then go and send it to everyone else in the organization. One of the things that I didn't appreciate was like, I was like, oh, they go and they have a conversation at review time about who should be promoted. And like, that's not how it works. Like, people are constantly saying, how is this person doing? Constantly. And so they're constantly saying, is Dan ready for this next thing? Is this person struggling? How are they doing on a new project? And so it's so helpful to be constantly feeding your manager, but frankly, other leaders in the company with your ideas. And so sometimes you need to be encouraged. You need ideas on how to do this stuff. And so my hope is that WorkCoach is that thing that can be the much more affordable and accessible tool for people that you can confide in that will help you be the better version of yourself at work.
And for folks who are listening that are curious to check it out, can you remind us what the URL is?
Yeah, it's work.coach.
And I love the way that you position. I shared this before we clicked record, but the about page that's on your website, remind me your mom's name.
Jane.
I knew it was with a J. I knew it was Jane or Janet or something like that, where you say, I needed that person to bounce ideas around with. Like, some of my clients will call that rubber ducking. They're like, I think I know what I might be doing, but I need to share it with someone in a safe space who can let me know, either like, attaboy, attagirl, keep going, you're on the right path, you know, have the confidence, keep pushing it, or hey, there's this thing that you're missing, and here's what it looks like, and here's how we can improve it, and here's the next steps there. Go get them, Tiger. And everybody needs a version of that, and that's kind of what you're looking to solve.
Yeah, my mom was the person I would talk to. She passed away in 2020. I like really miss talking to her all the time. And I've seen friends who they don't have someone to go bounce ideas off of. They don't just to be a sounding board. And so I think it's so helpful. And even though my mom was fantastic, she didn't work in tech. She couldn't have told you what a product manager did, right? And so the thing that I hope to do in making my mom proud is like, I hope to have WorkCoach be something that can be as supportive, can know me personally, I can confide in, but also have all the context of your role, your industry, your company. And you can't talk to your coworkers about it because you're competing with them. Can't talk to your manager. There isn't that person that you can talk to that has the full context and that you can be fully open with. And so unless you can have a wonderful coach, but like, that's not always affordable. It's not always accessible to people, especially people early in their career. That's the dream. And that's the thing I'm most excited about.
Dude, I love it. I think the reason why it spoke to me so like personally, that the story that you shared, is because my mom is a lifelong executive coach. And so I also did that with my grandfather was a lifelong entrepreneur. And so I talked to them a lot about things that I was going through. And because my mom was an executive coach, she didn't know tech, but she knew a lot about being an executive and navigating politics and dealing with performance issues and things. And so she would always be that sounding board for me. And so I think it just really spoke to me when I read your about page, because you had a very similar experience. I felt a lot of connection with that. That's cool.
It's a lot easier to process the 360 feedback I got when you have someone you can go to who can kind of talk you off that ledge.
Yeah.
You know, I sound very calm talking about it now, but like in the moment, you need somebody who can be like, blow off your steam and then give you some supportive real talk.
Yeah, man, of course. So we're talking a lot about leadership today. And I'm curious for you, when you started down that leadership journey, was there anything that you had to unlearn? I think about this sort of mental analogy where I used to think that you climbed up the career ladder and you just kept climbing and you go from senior doer to player coach to leader to executive or whatever. And really, it's not a straight climb. It's sort of like these series of ladders that don't touch, where to go from IC to senior IC, it does not help you to go from player coach to leader, which kind of sort of doesn't really help you become an executive. It doesn't really help you get into the C-suite. So for you, has there been anything you've had to learn or unlearn in your journey?
As an individual contributor, you just want to exceed expectations in all the things, right? It's like, oh, are you a good teammate? Are you doing good work? Are you having an impact? Are you communicating well? Like you just feels like you want to get above the career ladder objective set for whatever your role is. And it feels like you just can't do that forever. You can't exceed everywhere in everything. And so one of the things I had to learn was just you got to let certain fires burn, whether that's not trying to solve problems for people on your team or saying, I got three really big fires. I got to make sure that I put one out. And I'm going to tell my manager, I'm going to let that one burn. I'm going to let that simmer. And I'm not going to, maybe I'll do a little bit, but I just don't think that that's going to be addressed. And so that was a hard thing for me, was to learn to communicate that with my manager, have the conversation and get them on board. Because it's easy to be to try and be a perfectionist and say, I want to do everything, but then you're going to do everything, poorly. And so I think one of the key things for me was recognizing that for a lot of the managers I've had, that showed a lot of maturity, because there's problems everywhere. Everyone looks at all these companies and they're like, oh, these companies are doing so great. And every company is a complete and utter shit show on the inside. And so you think, this needs to be perfect. And it's like, no. Everyone is just thinking, let's hit our goals. And if we need to let something go sideways for a while, let's just make sure that we can properly prioritizing those things. And I find that that's the thing that is going to help you kind of build a relationship with your manager in an important way, but also demonstrate that you are thinking critically about what's important for the business and showing that your prioritization skills are correct and right and aligned.
And to your point earlier, that's different than coming to your manager and saying, hey, here's my three biggest fires. What should I do? Right? Earlier in our conversation, you were talking about having a perspective. Here's the next step that I see. And I think that that's a great next step for folks listening as well, which is pick the thing that you think is most important. And then in your one-on-one, ask your manager for feedback. Hey, would you prioritize these three fires any differently? And then you can talk about the way that you're making decisions and approaching problems and not being told what to do and getting assignments and going off and doing it. It's a totally different type of influence and impact that you can have.
Right. And if your manager's like, oh, I don't agree, it's like, why? What about my thinking process? What about my critical thinking skills? Am I thinking wrong? Do I need some new framework and how to think about this? Do I not have information? Because the other thing is that, the winds are changing constantly. It's not like, oh yeah, that annual plan that everybody just finished is set in stone. It's like, no, it's constant. The chessboard's being thrown sideways constantly. And so making sure that your priorities are aligned and that you're thinking similarly to your manager, as the winds shift, you can make sure that you can expect how your manager is going to think about how those shifting winds affect your strategy, what you need to do. And so just constantly recalibrating, I think, is an important part of it.
And in the moment, obviously, these things are hard to see. But given the perspective that you have now, where we're looking back at some of the moments in your journey, I'm curious if there's a connective tissue, like a through line between some of these tough moments and the mistakes and the missteps along the way and some of your biggest growth moments as well.
One of the things I keep coming back to is I find that things get overcomplicated. I think people make things too hard. Going back to my presentation from before, I just needed to find one third rail issue and I needed to incorporate that into the model. And I knew what that was. I didn't need to spend 3 weeks doing that. You still may need to do 3 weeks of advocating and talking with other stakeholders, but it goes back to everyone says there's performative work. I think that I honestly think that's true for a lot of times recently. And I think we make things way too complicated. And so I think back on the things that I was trying to do, the feedback I was giving, I think I made things too complicated, and I just need to say, what's the most simple version of what we need to do? How do I communicate it as simply as possible? And how do I just have like the top priority? For me, I found that when I was struggling or when I wasn't doing well, I was making things way too complicated. And I wasn't just taking a step back to say, it doesn't have to be that complicated. I can choose to make it really simple. And I can always make it more complicated from there. But like, am I getting the most simple fundamental thing right?
Simple is so hard, man. It really is. I haven't taken a public speaking course, but there's a really popular one. Ultra Speaking is the name of it. And in Ultra Speaking, I haven't taken the course, but I listened to the interview on Lenny's podcast. So I feel like I have the 80-20 of what it could be if I took the program. And it says, if you want to give a talk about something, the hardest thing to do is to boil down your talk into the 30-second version. It's very easy to do the 15-minute version. Well, I'm thinking about whatever the topic is. I'll talk about this and I'll talk about this and I'll make sure to include that. And I have to include this thing and I'll talk about the measurement and I'll give the steps and all that. And it's incredibly hard to distill it down to like, what is the actual main point and how do I explain it as clearly and succinctly as possible? And that's kind of what we're talking about here. It's very hard to, especially without a forcing function, whether that's a coach, whether that's a tool, whether that's another person. And so it makes sense why you're building what you're building.
Thanks.
And so for folks who are interested, we'll put links to work.coach in the description below. If folks want to learn more about you or connect with you and hear more about what you're up to and get involved, where should we send them?
Definitely on LinkedIn. I'm Daniel Walchnock on LinkedIn. Come find me. And I'm Dan Walch on X or Twitter or whatever it's called.
We'll put links to all that stuff below, man. Dude, thank you for coming on, sharing your journey, sharing some of the game, and being so vulnerable with us, dude.
Thanks for having me. This was really fun.